Welcome back to Commerce Experience with your host, Brian Walker, Chief Strategy Officer at Bloomreach. Today, we are taking a deeper look into the metaverse so that you can have everything you need to be on top of your game as more and more industries begin embracing it. Last episode, Brian took us through the metaverse by the numbers and shared his thoughts on whether or not companies should dive into it right away. So make sure you give that a listen too. Today's guest is Johnny Rodriguez, the Director of Strategic Innovation at Fresh Consulting. Johnny leads teams in designing both hardware and software products for businesses and individuals around the world, and regularly contributes to thought leadership around technology, innovation, and the metaverse. Welcome to Commerce Experience.
Johnny, thank you so much for joining us here today. It's great to have you here.
Excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
What was your first role or job that dealt with e-commerce or digital?
Well, that's a great question. I did both of those at a pretty young age. But I'll share that when I was younger, when I was in my middle school to high school years, even going into college, I actually did something that everybody knows now. Back at the time, it was new and novel. I was a beatboxer.
What?
I used to perform around the country. I used to perform around the state. Did that professionally for a little while, competitively. And so at an early age, I thought, I need to learn how to promote myself, right? And so I needed to come up with that digital kind of presence. And it was an opportunity for me to get familiar with, this was kind of the start of my development background, but building websites, promoting things, selling merchandise, things like that. And so I remember doing that with promoting my MySpace page and then learning about Wix and drag and drop website builders and things like that. And so I leveraged a lot of that before I knew any of the technical aspects of building websites and promoting and marketing. And so it kind of exposed me at a young age to that whole world of digital and just e-commerce.
Oh my gosh, I love that. Could you drop a couple of seconds of beatboxing on us?
I am not at all prepared, but it's funny 'cause I've been on a few other podcasts and I think I'm at 8 for 8 now of beatboxing on podcasts, and I don't mean to bring it up, but it's just such a big part of my life, you know? I will try. Let me see if I can get a little something going on. I don't know. There you go.
I think that's our new intro music for the podcast. That was amazing. Johnny, having you on here to talk about the metaverse, it's obviously a loaded word right now out there. It's a wide-ranging area and in many ways remains pretty ill-defined. A lot of people have, of course, different understandings of what it actually is, how expansive it is, what all it impacts and affects, augmented reality, virtual reality, gaming, immersive gaming experiences, virtual play spaces. Some would even include TikTok and other experiences like that, NFTs, cryptocurrencies. I'm curious how you define it as you're talking to clients and you're talking to people within the community that you're engaged with around the metaverse. How do you go about defining that?
Yes, that's a very good question. You're right. There's not an official source that tells you the definition. I think you talked about it not being in the dictionary. I'm sure we'll see a version of that at some point. I actually have looked at about 50 common definitions of the metaverse, and I consolidate it to what I think is the best definition. And I still don't think it's comprehensive. I really like the convergence of the physical and digital. I think that's actually maybe even better. But what I came up with here after looking at all these definitions is that the metaverse is an expansive network of interconnected and persistent 3D spaces where you can work, play, shop, and socialize with other people who are not in the same physical space. So you could probably stop on every word on that and give examples on those types of things, but I think it's important to mention that it's all those kind of details or kind of hits on a lot of different areas there. But that's, I think, the definition we go to often where I work as we talk about the metaverse and its connection to the digital life.
What stood out to me as you gave that definition was actually 3D, which is sort of a new kind of element that I haven't heard others include there. Just double clicking on that, you know, why would you include 3D?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd like to use the word spatial. If you think about the metaverse being a kind of umbrella category, and you talked about this for things like AR and VR, and you talked about other things there, right? Even from an augmented reality perspective, you're in a sense doing this, the Star Wars hologram in the room effect, right? Spatially, there's somebody there with you, right? From a virtual reality perspective, it's immersive and there's a spatial component to it. And then if you think about these different experiences, you talked about Roblox, Fortnite, Sandbox, we could say Decentraland, Somniospace, there's over 200 different virtual environments. The thing that's very common across these is that they have some spatial component to them, where you're interacting with people physically. If we're in the same room, we're close to each other, we're far away, and then there's, you know, we can hear each other or not. A lot of these environments are building for that, where they're simulating that parallel kind of interaction with people where you can actually go from place to place. So the 3D, I think, part could be synonymous with spatial there, but I think that that's an important key distinction, which I think would take out things like TikTok theoretically, right? If you went with this definition, but it's very much a digital presence, right? You know, TikTok account and your Instagram and your social media, all that can have digital aspects to it. But I think the distinguishing factor is, you know, ByteDance, the parent company of TikTok, they're working on a metaverse version that's already in beta and released in other countries. And so they're thinking about that as kind of a slightly distinction into that 3D realm. So
when people ask you for examples that are out in the wild today, some existing experiences of how digital brands, or I should say brands and retailers, are using these kinds of digital experiences today, what are some examples, both good and bad, maybe, that you would point to as this is already happening? Here's a couple of examples you would point to.
I'll give you three good examples and one bad example. How about that?
That sounds good.
I mean, I think the one that we are probably, a lot of us maybe listening, or those that are in maybe older than Gen Z or Gen Alpha, a lot of us are Amazon shoppers. So Amazon does a pretty good job there. I mean, they released ARView in 2017. And that was just the ability to see furniture in your home using your camera. And then 2020, they released Room Decorator. Last week, or I think 2 weeks ago, they released another update on that where you can start to place even more products. The inventory went up another, I think, 35% of their products are now available for you to place in your room. And so there's elements there of being able to see things in an environment. We talked about the spatial aspect of the metaverse. I mean, it's being able to see it in your space. So I think, I mean, Amazon's a pretty big online retailer.
I haven't actually heard of them.
Really?
I'm just kidding.
I was like, wow. No, I thought you meant the AR view in the room.
No, I was just kidding. Amazon. Yeah, of course.
So, I mean, that's kind of a more obvious one of usage of AR and of somebody's physical environment. But I also think about like Nike. Nike's doing some interesting things there. And there's almost monthly or every couple of months we hear something new. Last year, they filed 7 trademark applications indicating that they're going to produce, you know, Nike branded virtual footwear, apparel, accessories, and they're going to use those in virtual environments. All of them call that particular thing out. Then December rolls around and they acquire this NFT studio called Artifact, RTFKT. It's not the way you would think it would be spelled. And they're a studio that produces digital collectibles, that do digital sneakers and things like that. And so I point to like Artifact, now Nike. Last year, they collaborated with the teenage artist, I think his name was his name is Fuocious or something like that, and they basically they partnered with him to sell real sneakers paired with digital ones, and so they sold an exclusive 600 pairs, and in 6 minutes they netted over, I think it was like $3.1 million. So it's an example of like seeing something, that connection of the physical and digital. And I think that takes me to my third example, which is actually something I have on my desk because I was actually drinking one of these this morning. But Coca-Cola has this can of Coca-Cola Zero Sugar Bite. And it's this drink that they introduced in the quote unquote metaverse, Fortnite. They had this Pixel Island where you can go on and play this game, and they released this drink there. And then they actually paired that with a physical drink that you could go and buy. So it was another example of kind of this digital. You buy something digital, you get the physical. And then in other cases with Nike, you buy the physical, you get the digital. And there's that kind of connection. So those are some interesting examples that I've heard of. Maybe a bad example for you, Brian, is I know I was excited to see the first bank to enter the metaverse. And that was like in the news article. And JP Morgan said, we're launching this lounge in the metaverse called, and it's going to be in Decentraland, one of these kind of virtual metaverse environments. And they were really excited about being in the metaverse. And I went and joined day one. I jumped in. And right when I walked in, I saw this tiger kind of roaming around. I saw the portrait of the CEO on the wall. And that was it. It was literally this, there was no activities. There was no content. There was no engagement. There was no gaming. It was just that they purchased land in this environment, this digital land. And they had an empty room to claim that they had a presence. And it was quite disappointing, considering that a few days later, Samsung did a digital twin version of their New York office and then did a gaming thing and released NFT. And so it was like in contrast, seeing that, you know, some brands are thinking about, hey, we want to get in, but they don't really know quite what to do. And so they're just buy land and have some space. And so I think that's an example of that. I mean, there's a law called Amara's Law. I don't know if you've heard of this.
No, I have not.
It basically says that we tend to overestimate the effect of technology in the short run, and then we underestimate the effect in the long run. And I think that this is an example of like...
I'm not familiar with the term, but I'm familiar with the concept for sure. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, just something that came to mind.
What do you think it's going to take for us to see mass adoption get beyond perhaps gaming environments that are focused on people who want to go into these immersive gaming experiences? What do you think it's going to take for the metaverse to become, you know, really meaningful, not just something to kind of experiment and play with? What do you think is going to take for that to occur?
You know, I think adoption of the metaverse as we see it today is ramping up, but yes, it's quite small. I think the metaverse has been accelerated because of a confluence and convergence of different rapidly evolving technologies and factors. So if you think about the number of smartphones out there, thinking about remote work that's been accelerated here in the last few years, you know, we talk about 5G and when that's enabled, think about what might come with 6G. AR and VR, we don't have quite mass adoption at all. We don't have mass adoption on AR, VR. We're starting to see some larger adoption, but we're not quite there. Computing power in the browser, computing power just in general to be more accessible to more. So these technologies have enabled where we are today, but they're not quite at the point where we can get to those hyper-realistic experiences or where we start to value our digital life in a similar way, our digital goods in the same way that we value our physical goods. And I think it's when we start to see that line kind of shift that that'll be maybe a point to look at that. I think if you think about the Gartner hype cycle, once we see these foundational metaverse technologies, like I said, AR, VR, you know, 6G, things like that, and they go from that trough of disillusionment to the slope of enlightenment or to the plateau of productivity, then you're going to start to see that transformation and that acceleration. And it's something that it'll be more something we'll want to take seriously.
I sort of look at it as a combination of the fidelity of the experiences, which is dependent on the technology continuing to evolve and the accessories we use to engage or the channels we use to engage in these types of experiences, combined with killer use cases. And I think that's really where we're going to see mass adoption really start to ramp, and for this to become more of a mainstream set of activities. And it may start with media and entertainment. It may start with gaming, but commerce and certainly marketing are going to be intertwined in that. And, you know, that could be kind of the tipping point. The question, of course, we can't really answer is how long will that take? And when will that killer use case that really drives mass adoption kick in? And I think an example is that I like to think about is the QR code, which of course has been around for quite some time. I'm not sure off the top of my head, I know exactly when that innovation first hit the market. Of course, it was initially focused on the supply chain and manufacturing. But of course, it's been around and in the wild and in certain markets around the world had already reached mass adoption and was very prevalent. But certainly in North America or even Europe for that matter, it was really the pandemic that really drove mass adoption. And now pretty much every consumer out there understands what that is and how to engage with it and understands you just take a picture of it on your phone and then launches a website and everything from menus to boarding passes and everything else now are a function of that, and consumers understand it and expect it now. And I think you actually had and when we talked before, you had a funny story about that, and it kind of illustrated the point.
Yeah, so I back in 2012, I was thinking of creative ways to propose to my wife, and I went with a very Johnny way of doing the proposal, not so much my wife's way of doing it. And I look back thinking, I should have just went to a fancy dinner and got on my knee. But what I did is I ended up doing a QR code scavenger hunt throughout the city. And I had all of her friends and some of my friends involved and everything. And I had basically you scan the first QR code and tell you the clue, and then you go to the next one, as you would imagine. Well, turns out it was a little early, because my wife, my then girlfriend, got stuck on step one. She said, "What is the QR code?" And there was a hidden camera. There was a hidden camera there, you know, kind of following her. And she's like, "What's a QR code? What, you know?" And she had to ask around. And they're like, "I think you have to download an app for it." And so she downloaded the first thing that showed up on the App Store, and it had all these ads, and it was not very intuitive. And she didn't accept the permissions to view the camera, and it was just like, oh my goodness. And so I ended up having to call my friend and be like, "Hey, can you just give her your phone and download the app?" And so it was like, it was an example to me of like, and I think it speaks to, I'm usually on the bleeding edge, cutting edge of technology, adopting early to understand and educate and understand the implications. And I was doing that back at the time with QR codes, and it just wasn't ready for prime time. See, had I done that nowadays, Brian, I think it would have been a hit. It's native into iOS and Androids, and that's the kind of thing that's an example of technology advancing, where you start to see it native into the tools that we use regularly, that then it enables things. Technology advancing and enabling something new. I thought I had a killer experience, but just the technology wasn't there.
And of course, millions of consumers really first really engaged with QR codes once the pandemic started, and probably had to have a server in a restaurant or something help them understand the first time they really used it. And then from there, of course, now it's ubiquitous. Now, for companies that are looking to get involved in the metaverse, I think one of the key questions, and of course, let's just focus on a couple of key types of experiences. I think one of the things that people don't really have a grasp of is, what does it take to build and support these kinds of experiences? You even alluded to the fact that Amazon has now added a lot more products to their AR capabilities, right? And their AR shopping capabilities, which is exactly what I kind of want to focus on, is building and supporting these things when, of course, it remains kind of an emerging experience. Many brands and retailers may be thinking about dabbling in this, experimenting with it, but they're not really clear on what is it going to take and who do they turn to? What kind of skill sets are required? What kind of technology platforms are you working with to make these kinds of things happen?
That's a great question. Yeah, there are definitely a lot of considerations there. Cost is definitely one. You know, I think, again, the metaverse being, you know, there's the virtual environments and the AR and VR components. All of those separately have cost implications, right? If you're thinking about virtual environments and you're thinking of doing something like JP Morgan Chase did, then you're looking at quite a lot of money to buy land to then put your presence on a platform that already has 300 million users on it or something like that, or 300,000, sorry, not million, 300,000 users on it. Or if you want to plot and land next to Snoop Dogg in Sandbox, that's going to cost you money. So that's like using existing platforms. If you're thinking about creating your own custom environment, that's even more, right? You're thinking about leveraging things. A lot of the cutting edge technology like Unreal Engine 5, which was just released a little under a month ago, the output's incredible, but quite a big learning curve. And that will happen, right? The jump from 4 to 5 on that technology is pretty drastic. And so there's quite a lot of nuances there as it relates to the virtual environments. I think AR is one that is a little bit more accessible today of those three, given that there are platforms that, and I say this not because that we have AR glasses everywhere and everyone's wearing those. I think about that from a mobile, from your cell phone and being able to enable AR experiences from your phone. There's quite a lot of platforms out there that enable that. I think we look to, depending on what demographic you're looking at, right? There are whoever you're targeting, there might be different platforms for that. So I think about like Snapchat as a platform and how they have something like 339 million daily active users, I think is what I saw. You know, 73% of those are engaging with AR on a daily basis. And that's not just face effects now. That's actually turning the camera and putting things in your environment, or it's ads and things like that. And 78% of their total user base is Gen Z and millennials. So if you're thinking about if that's a demographic you're looking at and want to consider building an experience for, it might be an element of, hey, let's not reinvent the wheel here and create something from scratch. Let's leverage platforms like Snapchat or TikTok or things like that. But we like to look at the most accessible versions of that. So they're app-less AR experiences, metaverse environments that are accessible in the browser, accessible on a mobile phone, accessible in VR and AR. And there's, if you think about all the 200 environments that I've mentioned that are out there and growing, there's only a small handful that are accessible across all of these different devices. Yeah, I think it can be costly. There's maintenance involved.
Let's just take Roblox or Fortnite, for example, sure. First. So if I wanted to create an environment in there, a store, for example, for those involved in those games to come visit my brand and potentially like buy a digital good and so forth, what are we looking at? Are we looking at hundreds of thousands of dollars? Are we looking at less than that? Does it take specialized skill sets? And, you know, what from a development perspective is involved in creating those kinds of environments?
Yeah, I think we are talking hundreds of thousands. I think we're talking, you know, between 100 to 300,000 is probably a good starting range to think about. Some of these brands are spending more, you know, and it also depends to what extent. Are you doing wearables? Are you doing products that you're selling? Are you creating some gaming experience? Are you doing what Coca-Cola did, the Pixel Island with some games? So there are some implications there, but it does take, you know, understanding the platform. A lot of these platforms do have developer kits and they have ways for you to advertise as a brand. They partner with you and they help you along the way. But yeah, there's definitely elements of development experience. And then there's like user experience or customer experience, that like thinking about the journey of these different consumers. And so, you know, it's starting to touch a few elements, a few areas that can take some time to plan and things like that. So yeah, it can get pricey. I think turnaround time we've seen between 3 and 6 months as a good average to turn around an experience like that. A lot can evolve in 3 to 6 months as well, but it's quite different. They aren't transferable either. So if you do one in Roblox, you can't take that to Fortnite. And that's one of the big disadvantages we see today is this: there's not a lot of interoperability or building an advertising for one platform and then transferring that to another platform. So then you're thinking about, which platform are we selecting? Platform selection. And so it can get a little bit crazy. I work for Fresh Consulting and we help, we do a lot of kind of phase zero type projects where we help identify a lot of that type of stuff. And so we try to help navigate, you know, the platform selection, experience design, game development, things like that.
Well, along those lines, actually, I think that's a really interesting question. I hate to kind of just throw it at you, but if I were a client and said, look, I'm looking to experiment with digital commerce in these kinds of virtual environments, I'm a brand, my lifestyle that I'm projecting into the market is really important to me, and I want to lean into this kind of physical digital kind of combination. Maybe there's, you know, kind of an NFT that's tied to an offline product, but I want to create an immersive experience around that. And I'm going to want to refresh the products, right, related to different campaigns and other things I'm doing. Where would you want to steer me? Where would you say, well, this kind of environment is probably the best place to start experimenting with that based on like different demographic choices that I may be making around targeting different types of consumers? And there may be also PR and kind of brand lift that is a big consideration for me even considering being involved in something like this. Where would you steer me, given all the different platforms for these sort of virtual environments today?
Yes. Yeah, there are definitely some go-to platforms we think about. Like I said, there are implications around, you know, do you need to support a large number of concurrent users, right? If you need to go outside of 50, that eliminates quite a lot of platforms. If you need to go outside of 100, that cuts out a lot of people too. There are some platforms that will do, if you think about Fortnite, they did a concert, or they've done a few concerts, but they had you know, they had one with Travis Scott where they, you know, I think it was, I mean, it was like Marshmello, Travis Scott, Ariana Grande, where they performed, and there was, they have a limitation on concurrent users. So they basically spun up a different server every time they hit their maximum. And then eventually they had quite a lot, right? So you think about Travis Scott had 12.3 million participants, right? This is in a single show on Fortnite. And so that was a platform that kind of handles it well. So some of these other platforms don't handle that as well. So I would say that if you're thinking about it for your brand and for your business, part of it is an element of that is dabbling and experiencing it yourself, going through the different platforms. There's quite a, you know, there's definitely, you know, a small number that are most, you know, some of the well-known platforms out there. But we like to point people to spatial.io as a place to dabble, understand virtual environments. They give you a few for free. They partner with a lot of different companies, but they have a limitation of about 50. I think they're expanding, but that's a place where you can have a digital presence, virtual presence. You can host meetings, replace your Zoom meetings with virtual meetings, and get a sense for what that feels like to be in a spatial environment where you get close to somebody, you can hear them when you go further away. Conference room. So we like to look at things like Spatial. Decentraland is an interesting one because it is also browser based, so it's quite accessible. You don't need to download, and you get a sense. I would say go look at the casinos, not to just gamble, but see what's going on with the casinos, because you'll see that you'll be welcomed by people that have full-time jobs in Decentraland, introducing and welcoming you to casinos, and you'll play a slot machine that's owned by five people, and every time you pull that lever, they're earning a small amount of money. They're part owners in a slot machine. So you get a sense for like educating yourself on what's out there, what's happening. And that's kind of my initial thought process, is kind of educating themselves. Yeah.
So you touched on one thing around concurrent users. I just want to make sure, you know, I understand it and the listeners understand that point a little bit better. So let's say I'm that brand and I'm trying to create excitement around a product launch and so on. And I want to host maybe an event online, like a concert or something of that nature, maybe bring in a celebrity endorser that I'm working with in my advertising campaigns. And I've got to then plan for how to scale that in case it is wildly successful and doesn't degrade the experience of the people I'm attracting to it. You've actually got to think through that, much the way we thought about e-commerce websites hosted on physical hardware years ago. It sounds to me like there's kind of an issue there you've got to kind of plan for and make sure you understand when you think about driving a lot of user engagement and traffic to these kinds of experiences.
That's absolutely true. Yes, there are a lot of these platforms don't handle large amount of users. And when they do, it doesn't mean that they'll engage with each other. MasterCard launched today a pretty awesome experience. A friend of ours helped lead some of that, but they created one today, and they're going to have a concert going for 24/7, I think starting tomorrow for the full month of June for Pride Month. And 24/7, there's going to be a DJ. So if I jump in there with you, you and I may never engage with each other. We may never interact with each other. We might be on one of 50 servers with 100 people maximum. Right. And so it becomes a little difficult as far as interacting with each other. As far as what we're consuming experience wise, that is will be consistent across everything. But it is a strong consideration if you're thinking about that being a core experience that you're trying to build, right? An interaction between users and their friends. And you pick a platform that doesn't simplify that, which quite a lot don't do that today. And that's a factor we look at when we're evaluating environments. That could be a challenge today, and it's not quite solved, to be honest, until we can get, again, more computing power, servers that can handle more experience. And this is why the mass adoption's not quite there, because this is one of those little small pieces there that needs to evolve and needs to expand.
That's really interesting. Just thinking about kind of today, what do you think are the pros and cons for brands and retailers kind of leaning in this area today? And again, just let's focus first on virtual environments. When you think about that question, how would you, if there's a brand you're advising and they're kind of asking, is it the right time? Should I take on this initiative? You know, what are sort of the pros and cons associated with that?
I'll start by saying that in general, we're not quite there, and it definitely shouldn't be a critical part of what you're planning on for advertising or experience-wise. But Yeah, there are definitely some cons and some pros for that. Maybe I'll start with a few cons. I talked about it being costly. It really can, especially if you start to go custom. Leveraging existing platforms could save you some budget for sure, but it still can be costly to jump into those. Maintaining those experiences can be very difficult. Evolving the experiences over time can be difficult. Think about an app. You know, we have another version of iOS coming in September, and every year there's a new version, and then eventually it starts to kick others out. So you have to be able to commit to the maintenance and the evolving of those experiences that kind of happen. So those are definitely some cons. As I think about the pros, one of the things that's really interesting is that, I mean, I think about when businesses went online, right? And how much that enabled. You didn't need to just have, you could have a physical store, but now you are allowed to have a, you know, an online store, or you could be a global company. The metaverse allows you to take, I think, the best of the online commerce side, which I think are things like speed and convenience. And then it adds the physical retail benefits to it, things like personalization and experience. And then it gives you kind of this newly transformed commerce experience, I think. Maybe we call it the metaverse commerce, but this combination of that online and physical, and because there's that spatial component. So it is an interesting opportunity to create new experiences and personalization in ways that you may not have been able to do that in the past. The second benefit is, I think, by adopting something early and experimenting earlier, you get to stay ahead, right? And you get to stay relevant in your industry. You know, they say that, I think there's the quote I often refer to is that since the year 2000, 52% of the companies that existed in the Fortune 500 no longer exist. And that's because of digital disruption, right? And so it's crazy to think about that. More than half are no longer exist. And they've, you know, I think about a lot of brands that I used to go to as a kid, Blockbuster, Toys R Us, you know, lots of big companies that no longer exist. And so there is an advantage to educating, staying ahead, staying relevant. And then lastly, like you can learn quickly and then, you know, you learn quickly and you do that by failing fast. And so in a lot of ways, you can go in and experiment and fail quickly and learn from that. It's very similar to the equivalent of the first main, I was just thinking about you, I think in the previous podcast, you talked about the iPhone launch in 2007, January, right? They announced it. And if you were part of that initial group of apps, that was a pretty big deal for you. A lot of those don't exist now, but it allowed them to be kind of in the forefront there. So those are the kind of the things that come to mind from pros and cons.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think there's definitely some benefits to understanding this and experimenting with it and starting to process how meaningful this can be to extend your brand experiences and kind of your value prop into this new and emerging, very potentially very engaging environment, right? That really extends what you mean to your consumer and the attributes in terms of your lifestyle and what you're projecting that blend into the physical world. You know, when we've done some research, I think I covered that in the last episode around what consumers are interested in when they think about the metaverse. Today, it's buying physical goods from a commerce perspective in addition to gaming and entertainment, which I think is a really interesting signal to pay attention to, right? And certainly in high consideration purchases, durable goods, things of that nature, you know, you could see a lot of promise for how you could understand and interrogate a product and experience it at some level through these kinds of experiences versus, you know, making that journey to go tour or test drive or what have you, a product. And then I think this extension of your physical products and brands and creating digital assets and unique and immersive experiences that you want to like draw a customer into or push a customer from into the physical products. I think there's a lot of promise there. And starting to understand it and experiment with it now gives you a foundation to then build a strategy, right? And be prepared. And I think the quote unquote iPhone moment caught a lot of people off guard. The mobile internet, mobile devices, that was not new, but it changed and it transformed very, very quickly. And there were a lot of businesses and brands that were sort of caught off guard and also didn't understand what the longer term implications were for their customer experiences and their industry as a whole. And that just exacerbated a lot of the disruption that was already starting, but certainly accelerated through that. So given that, when you think forward 5 to 10 years, you know, what are you thinking? What are you imagining this sort of virtual environments start to become, recognizing that there's a lot of dependencies on the technology advancing? And of course, I'm particularly interested in commerce as it relates to those types of immersive virtual environments. So let's just fast forward like a decade from now. What do you, in your mind, when you're starting to imagine that, what comes to mind?
Yeah, I definitely have a strong belief that there will be, in the same way that we have an Apple Watch or a smartwatch on our wrists, right, that has all the computing power that's, what is it, 12 times more powerful than what it was to send somebody to the moon, right? I think that we're going to have everyday wearable smart glasses before we ever have everyday wearable augmented reality or virtual reality in mass adoption. I think there's going to be quite a lot there. Every big tech company is working on a version of that that's either been launched or will be launched in the next year or two. And so I think if you fast forward 5 to 10 years, you're getting to more sleek, everyday wearable, ergonomic, discreet, wearable lens in your real world. And so I think that if you have experienced augmented reality or and I say augmented reality because it's a layer into the metaverse, right? In a way, it's the way that you might play games that way. And so instead of it being immersive or in a 2D experience, you're seeing that more in that in the real world, kind of adding that digital layer. So I think that we will have mass adoption there, and that will enable a lot for the commerce space as we think about buying new furniture, the clothes that you might wear, planning for, you know, quite a lot of different things, right? And we're seeing glimpses of that today with Warby Parker, and I bought glasses that way, or seeing what this might look like in my living room. And so I think we're going to see quite a lot more there and how it fits into your life, into your environment. I do think we'll have that ideal computing layer on top of life, and it'll be in the homes we live in and the places we work and the places we take care of each other. And I think that will be a big probably one of the first things that we'll see as it relates to those experiences. But I do think that in the same way that we have like Zoom calls and Google Meet and Microsoft Teams and meeting with people in a kind of a 2D format, I think that we will also start to regularly see people as a digital version of themselves, like an avatar, because their hair is a little messy or they don't look as good. I think that'll become more and more normal. You know, Zoom released a version of that. I think it was 4 months ago. Microsoft's already claimed that they're doing that. You can be an animal, or you can pick your version of yourself. And so I think that'll become more commonplace, especially as Gen Z has credit cards and enters the business world and they start to become leaders. And Gen Alpha's, you know, so I think quite a lot will accelerate there, and it'll become, we'll start to see more and more the same, like I said, the watch, it'll be something that will be more commonplace for us. But it is, to your point, I think it very much is 5 to 10 years away still. We're early. It is the pre-iPhone stage. It is the 1995 of the internet, right? Where it's coming, and it's something we want to be aware of and educate, like you said, but not quite ready to put all your marketing dollars towards that.
Yeah. And I think it's also, you just need to recognize that today, similar to like that 1995 internet in a way, right? It's not really possible to truly integrate it into your commerce and marketing stack. And so this is going to kind of sit out on this virtual island when you're talking about virtual environments. And it's not really going to be very integrated today. You're going to need to think about how to support that and manage that. But that will also change. And certainly, as so much of the commerce and marketing technology now is API first, and there's going to be opportunities to integrate that more effectively, this becomes another very important channel, right? And we talk about omnichannel and the integration of digital and physical stores and so on. This will be yet another channel for engagement that will have its own unique characteristics and opportunities, and ultimately we'll have it integrated into a way you can interact between the 2D web, in a sense, you know, the mobile web, virtual environments, augmented reality, physical stores, contact centers. It just keeps multiplying, which is a little daunting. But today, that's also, I think, from a technology perspective, these platforms don't integrate easily into the current commerce and marketing stacks. And that's another, like, I think, important consideration for people to think about. One of the things that I think is really interesting, and this is partly because I have Gen Z daughters who, and I've talked to many of their friends as well as friends of mine who have kids in the same age. These are kids who were like entering college when the pandemic hit. What's interesting about that portion of the population is they seem to almost be rejecting these virtual environments. They seem to be like not interested, want to go to Coachella, not experience a virtual Coachella. But then right behind them is this population who, during the pandemic, their adoption of these virtual environments may have actually accelerated. And they represent probably this Gen Alpha in a sense. They represent a population who's going to grow up very natively in this, and it's going to feel very normal. And as this fidelity improves and the technology improves, right, they're going to be right there with it. Do you worry about the metaverse becoming balkanized in a sense? Do you worry that there will be portions of the population that exist in one virtual universe and that they don't cross over into others, and there's other populations there with different even values, considerations, interests? Are you worried about that becoming a reality that we as a society, and certainly as marketers and businesses trying to engage those different populations, have to deal with?
I am worried about that. I do think that it's a pretty popular topic. Those that are building for metaverse environments and things like that are carefully looking at interoperability, your avatar and your digital goods going from platform to platform. It's just why you're seeing blockchain being introduced to metaverse environments. But there are corporations building metaverse environments, and they get to make a lot of those decisions. And in a way, those can become silos that are not interoperable. And that can bring a whole population of people in one particular environment and not going across different ones. I like to think that, you know, my hope is that the metaverse is an interoperable versus, right? You might go and work in a virtual environment. You might go and play. You might shop. But you'd go from platform to platform. But I do think that it could bring a whole group of, you know, large adoption into some of these environments that don't play friendly with others and might be even too open, right? Maybe don't have enough governance around it. And so maybe there's a lot that can be tricky there and considerations. I think in the same way that we look back at when the internet was introduced, I think those were some of the worries we had then. Like, wow, what's going to happen? And obviously there's other concerns like health and how connected are we going to be and things like that. And so I think there's a lot of parallel with the introduction of the internet to the introduction of the metaverse. But now it's taking that into 3D environments, which makes it even a little bit more real, right? If you think about the vision of the metaverse from the 1992 novel, right, that kind of introduced the topic, it's this world where you may not know the difference. And that could be definitely a very scary thing for people.
Well, Johnny, I want to thank you so much for coming on today. Really wanted to explore this from a more practical sort of application standpoint. And I want to thank you for sharing all your knowledge and experience around this. But as we wrap up, I do want to ask you our standard closing question I ask every guest on the show, which perhaps is particularly relevant given the topic that we've been talking about here. And that standard question that we close on is, what futuristic digital commerce innovation are you most looking forward to? Or alternatively, what do you think is overhyped and you think is going to be an unmitigated failure and you think we should just stop talking about it?
Yeah, I have a lot of opinions on both of these, but I'll stick to one that I like to think a little bit more positively and think about something I'm interested in and looking forward to. And I briefly touched on it. I am looking for a day where we will have an everyday wearable sleek smart glasses that we'll be able to wear. I adopted an early version of Focals by North, which was acquired by Google. I wore those for 8 months and the experience was incredible. I mean, they were clunky, right? They weren't there. We're not there yet.
You had some serious nerd cred though while you were wearing them. I'm sure.
I did. People said, do you have a camera on your glasses? No. It's a projector that bounces into my eyeball. Is that bad for you? Yeah, probably. We'll see. But what it showed me was a glimpse into the experience of being able to, and I thought that it would add more distractions, another screen that I have to think about. But in reality, it took away the need for me to look at my phone. It took away the need for me to look at my watch. I took off my watch. I didn't adopt a watch for a full year. The one version of the Apple Watch I didn't buy that year that I wore those glasses, I got to see what it looked like to interact with people and for my notifications to be muted because it knew I was talking to somebody. And when I'd finished, it gave me relevant notifications. So I got a small glimpse into what I think will be coming eventually. And that's a futuristic innovation, digital innovation, I think. And it's very tied, definitely tied to the commerce aspect, but it's something that I'm very much looking forward to. And I do believe is coming.
And that's when augmented reality can really be woven into our everyday life in a way that could be meaningful. But the killer app that I'm particularly interested in with that would be, you know, knowing someone's name and where I met them.
Oh, 100%. When I come across. that actually, Brian, that's actually the example I give all the time because these glasses would do that. I could come to you and I could remember our last conversation. Hey, how's your daughter? Hey, how was your experience at, you know, and I could remember. It's almost like a CRM that kind of remember, you know, totally something I go to. I agree with you.
Well, Johnny, thanks again so much for taking the time to be with us here today. And to all our listeners out there, check out the show notes for links to where you can connect with Johnny, to our previous podcast episode we've been talking about here, where I went through a bunch of numbers and research and data on consumers and adoption of this. And of course, you'll have an opportunity to engage with myself and Johnny there too, if you'd like to reach out to us. Meanwhile, be safe, be well, and here's to good business.